Tonight we'll be reading from several places in Srimad Bhagavatam. Starting with the third canto, chapter 5, text 1. The scene is at the source of the Ganges River. In the Himalayas, Haridwar. Even today, you'll find Haridwar there. But the scene that we're hearing from, the Bhakti Yoga texts tell us, is thousands of years ago. And it involves a discussion between two extraordinarily high caliber human beings. We pay attention to conversations between two persons according to the caliber of those persons. So Srimad Bhagavatam is full of conversations and dialogues between the highest caliber human beings. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam has such impact and importance. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, you have the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. Because Arjuna is far beyond the level of human beings today. And Krishna being Krishna, the source of all energy. Because of that, by studying that conversation, you become elevated far beyond the level of contemporary human beings. In Srimad Bhagavatam, you find the deepest issues that are analyzed, probed, and discussed. That's what goes on between human beings of the highest caliber. They discuss the deepest issues in all their intricacies. The Srimad Bhagavatam, as you know, literally means the most beautiful presentation of the science of the Supreme. Generally, people think that if there's any talk about the Supreme, cause of all causes, source of everything, it must be just religious faith, in which everything is pushed down your throat, don't bang. But Srimad Bhagavatam is all about discussion. And what the issues are in that discussion in Srimad Bhagavatam are things you ordinarily would never think of. In other words, your understanding of what the big issues are becomes extraordinarily bigger by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. The greatest issues of existence have been thoroughly analyzed and discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can take advantage. As you may have noticed, people today are very bewildered. They don't know what to think or how to think it. They have a hard time to grasp what is the essence of life? But when you take to Srimad Bhagavatam, your consciousness is expanded and you can start to come face to face with issues and questions that you never dreamed existed before. Because you're dealing with personalities whom you never thought could have existed. Personalities far beyond the gross technologists of today. We all know what education has become today. It's all about studying what you need to study to get money and pay back your loans. Education. There's nothing, no sentiment anymore, basically speaking, about developing the so-called finer qualities of human beings. And certainly very little sentiment about developing any knowledge beyond the 10th grade. Because the educational system is so tragic, it's producing tragic human beings who cannot control themselves, who cause problems wherever they go, whatever they do. That's the fault of the educational system. When you turn to Srimad Bhagavatam, however, your intelligence becomes developed on a level you never dreamed was possible. You start grappling with issues that you never dreamed existed. Rather than just daily issues of what product should I buy, or who should I hook up with on the weekend? Should I live in this house or that flat or so on and so forth? Srimad Bhagavatam presents you with the real issues of human existence and beyond human existence. What is the science of the Supreme? People are so accustomed to no knowledge of the Supreme that as soon as they hear knowledge of the Supreme, they think, oh, another religious faith. What do you want me to believe? Just tell me right now, what do you want me to believe? They have no idea that there can be comprehensive, vast compendium of knowledge presenting the science of the Supreme. You can go to university 3, 4, 6, 8, 10 years studying some tiny phenomena of material existence. Why is it then that the science of the Supreme should be just some little catechism that you recite? Therefore, when you approach Srimad Bhagavatam, you see this is the greatest knowledge. This is the greatest science because it is about the greatest. People's writers, researchers spend most of their life just writing about one personality. It's like in the USA, scholars are in the habit of spending 20 years writing about one particular president. 3 volumes. Just about one mundane person who became president for not even sometimes 8 years, sometimes just 4 years. 3 huge volumes. And the researcher will dedicate 20, 25, 30 years of his life for them to be known as the consummate expert on so-and-so. Yet, when it comes to understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth, we think, okay, what do you want me to believe? Must be some kind of blind faith in some little book. That is why Srimad Bhagavatam is so important. It gives you real culture. It expands your horizons. Simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you are associating directly with Krishna. Krishna comes to you as the literature of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's one way. Of course, you know, Krishna comes to you as the Hare Krishna mantra. Krishna comes to you as food that's been offered to him. Just see how approachable Krishna is for those who are not envious. Krishna comes to you in ways that capture all your senses. Krishna never asks you, pleads with you, believe in me, please believe in me. He says, here's something for your eyes, here's something for your tongue, here's something for your ears, here's something for your intelligence, here's something for all parts of your existence. So what more do we want? What is our resistance? What is our impediment? Envy. We'll talk more about that later. The root cause of all envy is envy of Krishna. And then you become envious of other people. You only become envious of someone who has something better than you. You don't envy a worse situation, a person in a worse situation. You always envy someone who has something better, in a better situation. Just like maybe if you were on the first or second floor, or third floor, or even higher in a building this afternoon. When the building started shaking, you're probably envying those who were outside in the park or something. Nevertheless, in spite of building shaking, you'll see that Friday night, you know, it's going on as normal. The original source of our envy is Krishna. Now, to understand that statement, you have to understand Krishna. Why would I be envious of Krishna? The deeper you understand Krishna, the more you see. That's where my envy is aimed at. This is why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, Idam tute guhyatamam prabhaksyam yanasuyave jnanam vijnanam sakatam yajyatta mokshase shubha. He says, Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I'm going to teach you the most confidential knowledge. You'll know everything in full. I'm going to teach you both wisdom and applied wisdom. And by listening to what I'm saying, you'll become free from material illusion. That's the test of a real education. So, let us look at chapter 5 of the third canto, the first few verses. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, Vidura, the best amongst the Kuru dynasty, who was perfect in devotional service to the Lord, thus reached the source of the celestial Ganges River, Hardwar, where Maitreya, the great, fathomless, learned sage of the world, was seated. Vidura, who was perfect in gentleness and satisfied in transcendence, inquired from him. Purport. Vidura was already perfect due to his unalloyed devotion to the infallible Lord. The Lord and the living entities are all qualitatively the same by nature, but the Lord is quantitatively much greater than any individual living entity. He is ever infallible, whereas the living entities are prone to fall under the illusory energy. Vidura had already surpassed the fallible nature of the living entity in conditional life due to his being achyutabhava, or legitimately absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord. This stage of life is called Achyuta Bhava Siddha, or perfection by dint of devotional service. Anyone, therefore, who is absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord is a liberated soul and has all admirable qualities. The learned sage Maitreya was sitting in a solitary place on the bank of the Ganges at Hardwar, and Vidura, who was a perfect devotee of the Lord and possessed all good transcendental qualities, approached him for inquiry. Om Yena Chimananasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Saraswati Gaurabhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Real culture means to find top-grade personalities and approach them. Both Vidura and Maitreya were qualified. Yet and still, Vidura is approaching Maitreya for deepening his understanding. You notice they don't require some huge university campus. They're meeting by the river. That's the traditional place in ancient yoga culture where instruction is received, on the bank of a holy river such as the Ganges. And there, the senior sage will answer questions, will instruct, and the junior sage will listen and ask questions. And in this way, human civilization expands. In other words, human civilization does not expand by gross technology. It doesn't expand by financial arrangements, marketing, consumerism. Human civilization expands through questions and answers between highly elevated personalities. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching you. It's teaching you the real standard of human civilization, human culture. Notice the qualities described. The qualities of Vidura and Maitreya. Maitreya is described as agata bhutam. He had unfathomed knowledge. That means you can't get to the depths of it. And Vidura is described as being on the platform of achyuta bhava siddha. Perfect by thorough engagement in bhakti, in devotional service to Krishna. He's described also as having saushilya, gentleness, and also he's guna abhitripta, satisfied in transcendental qualities. So this description of the two lets you know you're not going to hear any ordinary conversation about mundane topics. You're going to hear the deepest subject matter, which will be beneficial for all living entities. That is the nature of the science of Krishna. It actually satisfies the soul, your core being, simply by hearing and asking questions about Krishna. This deepest depth of you becomes satisfied. Let's consider how Vidura is described as saushilya. He's perfect in gentleness. No one can actually be gentle, situated in the illusory energy. You have to be rough, no matter how refined your externals may be. You have to be rough, because by being situated in the illusory energy of Krishna, you're roughing it. You're trying to be the predominator, the enjoyer. You may talk in a very refined way with large vocabulary. You may dress very elegantly. You may have nice manners. Nevertheless, you're rough, because you're roughing it in the material world. You're in the material world to be the predominator, the controller, and the enjoyer. So you may go about that roughness in a very nice way, or you may go about that roughness in a very rough way. Still, the bottom line is the same. How can I control and enjoy? Of course, You'll defend yourself, say, it's not that I just want to control and enjoy for myself. I'll share it with my friends. I'll share it with my partner or those around me that I like. But are you thinking how you can benefit all living entities? No, it's only those living entities whom you deem are favorable for you. Only those. I think this is going to go on probably through the night. All right. Just think, regardless of what you're doing, the earth is shaking. Similarly, whether you're a nice materialist or a rough materialist, bottom line is the same. You're in the world to get your share of control and enjoyment. Now you may say, well, I just want a little bit. In other words, I'm a small thief. I don't want much. I'm not like those big thieves. Still, when you're situated in Krishna's illusory energy, you must be rough. Because regardless of how well-mannered and refined you act, you are wrongly situated. You're situated in a very rough situation of being rebellious, of being coarse, of being exploitative. You're here to exploit resources, to exploit bodies, to exploit minds. And so how can you really be gentle? But we see, in terms of Vidurya, Saushilya, perfect in gentleness. Because he's properly situated. He's situated in Krishna's spiritual energy. So understanding Krishna means understanding the material energy and the spiritual energy, because they're both coming from the same source. Someone who has knowledge of bhakti yoga, they understand how the material energy is working to illusion and bewilder everyone. They understand how Krishna's internal potency, his spiritual energy, what's that all about? And that means you understand the material world as well as the spiritual world. The material world means temporary forms. The spiritual world means eternal forms. But it's not that the spiritual world is full of material forms. The forms in the material world are temporary, full of ignorance and misery. The forms in the spiritual world are composed not of blood, flesh and bones of various types, but composed of full knowledge, full bliss, and eternality. So there are forms both in the material world and in the spiritual world, but their quality is completely different. Srimad Bhagavatam describes Krishna's body. Krishna's body is not different from himself. And in our original condition, in our original situation, our body is not different from the self. But we've taken on these temporary bodies of matter in a temporary material world, and we're struggling for temporary satisfaction. Actually, we, in our original nature, have the same kind of body as Krishna, qualitatively. But we come to a prison house world, and we have our prison uniforms. And we're going to try to enjoy our prison life. I've never heard about it going on in other places of the world, but in New Zealand all the time I hear about how the prisoners get so many things smuggled into prison. Everything, you know, mobile phones, the drugs, amazing. So many things are smuggled into prisons, you know, because they want to enjoy in prison. Now, if you're an intelligent prisoner, you want to do everything you can to get out. But not so intelligent prisoner, foolish prisoner means, whether I get out, who cares? I want to enjoy now in prison. Can you smuggle some drugs in for me? Intelligent prisoner thinks, would I want to be caught with any contraband, any illegal substances inside prison? It'll just prolong my stay here. But the foolish prisoner says, no, I got to enjoy now. So this is what we're like. We think we're in this world to enjoy. And we think that this world owes us a favor. It owes us pleasure. It's very important that we listen to these conversations between Vidura and Maitreya and all the topmost sages in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll continue with text 2. I'll just read the Sanskrit. Vidura uvacha sukaya kamani karoti loko natai sukham banya uparamam va. Vindeta bhuyas tata eva dukam yat atrayuktam bhagavan vadan na. Vidura said, O great sage, everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to attain happiness. But one finds neither satisfaction nor the mitigation of distress. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities. Please, therefore, give us directions on how one should live for real happiness. Without understanding this point, we cannot proceed further in our spiritual quest. Understanding this point is a spiritual realization. That no matter how I try to attain happiness and fight back distress, I won't find satisfaction, and nor will I stop the distress. In fact, as Vidura is saying in his question, by my very effort to grab happiness and beat back distress, I'm simply aggravating the whole situation. I'm agitating my consciousness. Sometimes people hear this and they say, well, what am I supposed to do if I don't try for happiness and try to beat back distress? What am I supposed to do? You say the whole process will just aggravate and agitate my consciousness. So what, should I do nothing? That's not what Vidura is recommending. He's saying, use your human life for inquiry into the Supreme Absolute Truth. Don't use your human form of life for trying to grab happiness and beat back distress. The very efforts to do that will make your situation worse. Just like, you know, if you're sick and you exercise before the time before you're fully well, or you can, if you eat the wrong thing, or so many activities, if you do those, you'll aggravate your disease condition. Now you may say, I'm just trying to enjoy. I'm trying to please myself. But what you're actually doing is just stirring up your disease condition and making it worse. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not recommending inactivity. It is recommending activity for the highest purpose. Vidura wants to clear this point up because he knows that certainly he understands this point, but for everyone else, the common person, they'll never be able to go deeper in spiritual knowledge until they master this point. It's like for those of you who have been to our sessions, Wednesday, Thursday. People ask, well, what are you trying to do? You're really stirring us up. What are you trying to do? I'm actually teaching this point, using contemporary examples, contemporary situations. Because without dealing with this point, it's impossible to go further. Without understanding the futility of material existence, you can't make any spiritual advancement. So therefore, we go backwards and forwards over this point. Like a car running over something. Run over once, back up, run over it again. Back up, turn the car sideways, then run over from another angle. Sometimes people say, hey, you know, when are you going to get spiritual? When are you going to talk about spiritual stuff? But this is spiritual. Because the material energy that bewilders us, that material energy of illusion, that's Krishna's energy. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. Daivi esha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. This material energy of mine is practically impossible to overcome. So Krishna claims proprietorship. It's my illusion. That I've created. And you have fallen victim to. It's practically impossible not to fall a victim to. But, if you do things my way, if you take my plan, then you can easily escape the clutches of this illusory energy. So learning from Krishna how to deal with the illusory energy is a spiritual art. For Krishna, there's no illusion. But because we're so tiny, as tiny parts of Krishna, we fall under the influence of the illusory energy, which is Krishna's energy. For Krishna, everything is spiritual. And similarly, for those who are perfectly aligned with Krishna, those parts of Krishna that are perfectly aligned with him, there's actually no material energy. Everything is spiritual. But you can't artificially say that. Just like when you're in prison, you can't say, well, what's the difference whether you're in prison or outside of prison? It's all New Zealand. The government's controlling both situations, inside the prison, outside the prison. No, you're supposed to be out of prison. So similarly, the material energy and the spiritual energy belong to Krishna, but you're not supposed to be in the material energy, even though it belongs to Krishna. So you're hearing Vidura's mercy. His mercy is that before inquiring deeper into the science of the Supreme, he wants to get this point established. Because otherwise, you can't go any further. Let's look at the purport. Vidura asked Maitreya some common questions, which was not originally his intention. Uddhava asked Vidura to approach Maitreya Muni and inquire into all the truths concerning the Lord, his name, fame, quality, form, pastimes, entourage, and so forth. And thus, When Vidura approached Maitreya, he should have asked only about the Lord. But out of natural humility, he did not immediately ask about the Lord, but inquired into a subject which would be of great importance to the common man. A common man cannot understand the Lord. He must first know the real position of his life under the influence of the illusory energy. In illusion, one thinks that he can be happy only by fruit of activities. But what actually happens is that one becomes more and more entangled in the network of action and reaction and does not find any solution to the problem of life. There's a nice song in this connection. Because of a great desire to have all happiness in life, I built this house. But unfortunately, the whole scheme has turned to ashes because the house was unexpectedly set on fire. The law of nature is like that. Everyone tries to become happy by planning in the material world, but the law of nature is so cruel that it sets fire to one's schemes. The fruitive worker is not happy in his schemes, nor is there any satiation of his continuous hankering for happiness. Just think about it. Will it ever end, my hunger for happiness? Do I ever get enough? Other than living for survival and living for happiness, human beings don't know what to do. So this first principle that Vidura is establishing by his questions to Maitreya, this is mercy, this is compassion. Certainly Vidura is not bewildered. He understands this principle, but he knows that ordinary persons, they can't see through this illusion. So he's helping. Again, this is a sign of Vidura's gentleness. He's sensitive to the knowledge levels of others. People may be so experienced about the futility of material existence, but they still can't give it up. The pressures on them are so great. As we always discuss, pressures from your body and mind, pressures from those around you, pressures from society. So Vidura is being very tender-hearted. Let's get this principle understood by everyone. Then we can go further. Certainly Vidura is able to go much further, but he's thinking of others. That's the nature of a bhakti yogi. You're concerned about the others. You're concerned about all living entities and how all living entities can benefit. Therefore, you want to know, what's the real benefit? What is of actual value for all living entities? Not just that the I, me, and mine. You'll never be satisfied just worrying about I, me, and mine. Me and those bodies that are in favorable relationship with me. And you know how that changes all the time. These days, people go in and out of your life like going through revolving doors, you know? Your friends, even your family members. So this is a very important point. And if you master it, you save yourself so much trouble, and then you have a smooth motorway for going deeper into the science of the Supreme. So this is spiritual knowledge. Learning how to deal with the energy of illusion by hearing directly from Krishna and Krishna's representative, that is spiritual. The energy, even though it's bewildering, even though it's causing hallucinations, it's still Krishna's energy. And Krishna is all spiritual. Krishna doesn't fall victim to his own illusory energy. But because we're so tiny, like sparks that jump out of a fire, we lose our fiery quality, so to speak. We land on wet grass, we land in the water. But Krishna never loses his nature. So Vidura wants to establish that point. Because otherwise you can't make any spiritual progress. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, what's the first thing that Krishna wants to establish? In chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita? You're not the body. That's Krishna's mercy. Krishna is feeling for the sufferings of living entities who think the body and mind are the self. So the beginning of Bhagavad Gita is all about compassion. By Krishna, why should you suffer in this way? Wasting lifetime after lifetime trying to please your temporary body and mind, which you're not. Why don't you listen to me? That's the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna's bewildered. Why is Arjuna bewildered? By the bodily notion of life. Finally, he submits himself to Krishna. Let's put all friendly talks aside. I know that we're friends, but still, you are the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now you please instruct me. I've lost all my understanding, my composure, my balance. I've lost it all due to weakness. I'm bewildered. I'm illusioned. Now I'm turning to you. Not as your friend, but as your student. Please instruct me. That's when Bhagavad Gita really gets going. Of course, the introduction, the chapter 1, first part of chapter 2, are necessary to establish that Arjuna is bewildered. So you can experience bewilderment via Arjuna. He's doing you a favor. He's doing a service to Krishna by demonstrating for real what it's like to be an illusion. So basically, Arjuna is giving the best demonstration of being an illusion that you can imagine. It's the most cultured, refined demonstration of illusion. So eloquently presented. And the excuses he gives to Krishna, you would never be able to make up such good excuses. So he's speaking in such a high way, in such a cultured, dignified, refined way. And what does Krishna tell him? In a very nice way, Krishna calls him a fool. You're speaking as if you were intelligent. It's a dignified way of calling someone, you know, calling someone stupid. So that is Krishna's mercy. And similarly, you're getting Vidura's mercy. We're meant to think deeply about these things. So Vidura is pointing out his observation to Maitreya. Here's the tendency. Everyone in this world engages in fruitive, karmic activities, activities performed for some kind of gain, to attain happiness. But one finds neither satisfaction nor the mitigation of distress. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities. Please, therefore, give us directions on how one should live for real happiness. Now just think, aggravated by trying to be happy. We're so desperate for material enjoyment in this world that, okay, aggravated by being happy, let it come. There's nothing better than that. Can you really appreciate what it's like to be aggravated by your attempt to be happy? It's a temporary state that comes over you when you think you're happy. It comes and goes. That's why it's called an aggravation. Krishna says, Matra sparsha shitoshna sukha dukada. The happiness and distress comes and goes like the winter and summer season. And what produces that sensation of happiness and distress felt by your mind, felt by your senses? Samsparsha jaboga. It's sense perception. It comes to you through your senses. That includes your mind. Your experience of happiness comes to you through your five bodily senses and your mind. The mind is feeling things. I feel good. I feel nice. I feel okay. That feels good. That feels nice. That tastes good. Ooh, that looks good. That makes my mind feel happy. And then you want others to help you in the same way. Can you help my senses and my mind feel good? I'll be your best friend if you do that. But how much can I pay to have my senses and mind feel good? And of course the other person will say, well, how much is it worth to you? And then you have to bargain. How much of my life do I want to offer for temporary happiness? In other words, I want to feel happiness and I want to fight off distress, even though I don't know who is the one experiencing that happiness and distress. That's not important. I simply want to experience happiness and push back the distress. I don't know who the experiencer is. So Vidura wants to establish this first principle in spiritual knowledge, and then we can move on. Let's go to text 3. Janasya Krishna Vimukasya Daiva Adharma Shilasya Sudukitasya Anugahayeha Charanti Nunam Bhutani Bhavyani Janardanasya. O my Lord, great philanthropic souls travel on the earth on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to show compassion to the fallen souls who are averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord. So here we are learning what is real philanthropy, what is real charity, what is real care. The efforts to educate and train living entities who have forgotten their relationship with Krishna, that is the greatest philanthropy. And the effects of that philanthropy or charity are not just felt in one lifetime. That's why we're not disturbed when persons dabble in bhakti yoga and then they may disappear. Of course, we hope they won't disappear, but at the same time, they'll never lose whatever beginning they made. That will be their eternal asset, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Svabhavapriyasya dharmasya trayate mahato vaya. Just a little bit of advancement on this bhakti path can prevent the greatest disaster from happening to you. And what is that greatest disaster? That you lose your human form of life in your next birth. So therefore, those who are actually philanthropic and charitable, they go here, they go there, they travel the world to give this highest benefit. It's hard enough to try to give knowledge of how to live a healthy life to someone who's sick. But just think, you're trying to give knowledge of a spiritually healthy life to persons who think they are completely healthy already. This is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, no one is more dear, nor will ever be one more dear than the one who distributes this knowledge to others, this knowledge of bhakti. Krishna knows it's often a thankless task. You're trying to convince persons who think they're completely well, you're trying to convince them, no, you're actually sick, you need medicine. Who, me? It's the greatest mission in life. It's the greatest team to play on. So basically, Vidura is saying to Maitreya, this is the greatest teamwork. Others should assist. This is compassion. Compassion upon whom? Upon those who are averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord. Now, you might,
well, how could
averse to subordination? I mean, I'm a nice person, you're a nice person. What's this about subordination and being averse to subordination? But let's consider a family, a functional family. Hard to find these days, but let's consider a functional family. If someone in the family, one of the kids, does something which is disharmonious to the family, he or she goes off and does it her own thing, disregards the family and its interests, everyone would say, this is being insubordinate. You are neglecting the interests of your family. You're rebelling here. Maybe some of you remember rebelling as a teenager. Of course, these days, teenage rebellions are kind of a thing of the past because, you know, it's like, hey, whatever, do whatever you want. Maybe in the USA they, you know, still have teenage rebellions. Here in New Zealand, you know, parents just tell their kids, hey, whatever, follow your dream. Be happy in your own way, whatever, we just want you to be happy. There's nothing to rebel against, you know. So anyway, let's still use the example. If you have a functional family that has some kind of heritage and traditions passed on from generation to generation, and the son or the daughter just acts in a way contrary to all that, that's known as being averse to subordination. And the family members will look down on you. You're not acting for the benefit of the family. I remember another instance when I was 14. I had an uncle. He was the enforcer in the family dynasty. My mother's brother. He was very successful. So my mother would call him in to lecture me. So he would. So my dear nephew, you're 14 now, and no doubt you'll be considering some girls out there. But just remember, this family believes in good genes. We want to know that girl's education. We want to know what her family's like. We believe in good genes. So he's letting me know, you know, this is what you got to be subordinate to. This is the way things work. We don't want any dummies born in our family life. We want to be aware of who you're interacting with. That was their take on things. So he's letting me know this is how we want the family to go on, and this is the role you should be playing. Of course, I never expected that I did what I did. In any case, the example is about being averse to subordination. I'm doing my own thing. So that's basically what we've done to Krishna. I'm doing my own thing. I want to enjoy and control a bit in the material world. To understand our mistake, you have to understand the spiritual world. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam introduces to you. The world of non-material energy, non-material forms, personalities. Once you understand the spiritual world, then you can see the deviation that goes on in the material world, that being averse to subordination. You see forms in the material world. These forms are temporary. They bring suffering, ignorance. That doesn't mean there are no forms in the spiritual world. So Srimad Bhagavatam describes the all-perfect forms of the spiritual world, as well as it describes the imperfect forms of the material world. So you can see the whole picture. Otherwise, how will you be motivated to go to a higher level if you know nothing about the higher level? So this is how Vidura and Maitreya are laying the foundation for going deeper into the science of the Supreme. Once you understand Krishna, then you can understand your mistake. Otherwise, it's not possible. People will say, don't you want to believe in God? But you'll never actually repair your rebellion until you have deep understanding of the science of the Supreme. What is it about Krishna that I envy? What is it about Krishna that I'm in rebellion? So you might say, well, I guess we're just not following the cosmic laws. We're not following the edicts. We're not following the rules of Krishna. That's true, but things go deeper. We're not following all that because we're envious of Krishna. We want to imitate Krishna. To understand how we're trying to imitate Krishna, you have to understand Krishna. What does Krishna have that I want? Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. We want to imitate that, even though we are meant to be the enjoyed. Krishna is the predominator. We want to imitate that, even though we're meant to be predominated. We're Krishna's parts, meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. But we've thrown all that off and said, okay, here I am in the material world with a temporary body and mind. I want to enjoy the temporary material nature. That's imitating Krishna. And we go birth after birth through the cycle of repeated birth and death, trying to imitate Krishna's enjoyment. Now, to understand why we're trying to imitate Krishna's enjoyment, you have to know what Krishna has. Therefore, the official term for Krishna is Bhagavan. That's Krishna's official nomenclature. It's not his personal nomenclature, but that's his official capacity. As you know, Bhagavan means one who possesses unlimitedly all opulences, all wealth, all strength, all fame, all knowledge, all renunciation, all beauty, unlimitedly. That's what you're trying to pursue in your imitation of Krishna. You're trying to get a little wealth, a little fame, a little beauty, a little knowledge. All these opulences you're trying to get. And if you get a tiny bit, you think, oh, I'm so fortunate, I'm so happy. But what about Krishna, who is unlimitedly deep in all those opulences? Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam presents that you can search throughout the whole universe. You can search all the universes, and you'll never find anyone as extraordinary as Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, here are the topmost authorities, the topmost sages. They know the science of Krishna. They agree. They have discussed these issues threadbare. They've gone back and forth over it. And you can see that in Srimad Bhagavatam. You can see their dialogues. What about this? And what about that? But people will say this. But people will say that. This is all there in Bhagavatam. Points, counterpoints, questions, answers, further investigations, side notes. It's all there. It's all going on. Just like here, Vidura intends to inquire about Krishna. Krishna's personal existence. We'll find that out tomorrow night. Because Vidura really wants to know, how can the material energy come from Krishna, who is all spiritual, without Krishna being contaminated by the material energy? Furthermore, how can Krishna act within the material world with activities, qualities, forms, and he's got nothing to do with the material energy? He's not affected. How can that be? So this is what Vidura is on the way to now. But first he wants to make sure that you understand the fundamentals, the futility of the endeavor for fighting material happiness, attracting material happiness and fighting material distress. So don't waste your time. You're going to get what you're going to get anyway by the laws of karma. Use your human form of life to strive for something that time and your karma can't bring you. Remember, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, because you're never envious of me, I'm going to teach you this most confidential knowledge. So again, to understand how we could be envious of Krishna, you have to know what Krishna has. What does he do? What does he possess? So the most essential thing in life is to understand the science of Krishna. Then you can sort yourself out. So-called knowledge of God, that's an official beginning. It's like kindergarten. You might remember, some of you, the first day you attended school. I remember the first day I attended school. I was riding in a car with kids from the neighborhood, where the parents would take turns driving the kids to school. And all of a sudden, around the bend, you see this big building. School. Obviously, I had seen school buildings before as a little kid, but never considered going to them. Now, for the first day, I'm going to a school. Mm-hmm. I remember, what do you call it here, kindergarten, kindy? Yeah, I was in kindy, so it was boring for me. So I used to do things like pick up the little desks and put them on my head, things like that. And so the kindy teacher was getting really frustrated. But I thought, I can do whatever I like, because my mother will never find out, because my mother's not there. Yeah, I was just 5 years old, so I had everything figured out. So I remember leaving kindergarten, and that day, I walked out the end of the kindergarten session, because my mother was waiting in the car to pick up the neighborhood kids. And as I got to the car, I looked behind me, and there was a kindergarten teacher coming right behind me to tell my mother how naughty I had been. I was horrified. And then when I got home, she got out her belt. Can't do that in New Zealand. She got out her belt. He took my father's belt then. I know in New Zealand, I think that's barbaric, you know. Anyway, a few lashes across the bare bottom, and the next day I was a good boy in school. Anyway, the point is that if you actually want to understand what you're in rebellion against, you have to understand Krishna. Otherwise, you'll never understand. It's kindergarten knowledge to accept that there is a supreme source. Bhagavatam's far beyond that. Real knowledge begins with understanding the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth, who also has an impersonal presence, subordinate. Krishna explains he has an impersonal presence that's subordinate to him. So the Bhagavatam is not really groping with kindergarten issues like, is there a Supreme, is there not? It's moving far beyond that. It's describing to you the nature of the spiritual reality. The material world is the homeland of the material body. The spiritual world is the homeland of the spiritual body. Just like we have bodies composed of matter, in the spiritual world, there's no difference between the body and the self. It's all the same spiritual energy. We are originally qualitatively equal to Krishna, of the same essence, but we're so tiny. That's why we make mistakes like coming to the material world. Krishna never falls a victim to his illusory energy. It's his. It's totally under his control. So tomorrow we'll talk more about this apparent dilemma. How is it that from the all-spiritual Krishna comes the material world? From the all-knowing Krishna comes the material energy of ignorance.